Later, we'll be debating Airgrid's pylons project across the country with the company's Director of Grid Development, John Fitzgerald. Also here is journalist and broadcaster Tom McGurk, who is opposed to the project. And I'm also joined by Fine Gael TD Felice Offaly, Marcella Corcoran-Kennedy, and by Professor John Sweeney from the Geography Department at NUI Maynooth. We're going to begin by discussing climate change's role in our current weather conditions. The situation is better than it was this time last night. No reports of the types of floods in Cork, Waterford or Limerick that those places endured 24 hours ago. But is it the change in our climate that has caused A, the increasingly ferocious winds and rain, and B, the rising tides? And what is being done to prevent the damage caused? Here's what the Environment Minister Phil Hogan told Brian Dobson on RTE 6.1 News this evening.
Whether we have scientific evidence or not in relation to climate change, it looks as if we're going to have these type of weather patterns in the future. Mm. And we have to plan for them. So we have a national adaptation strategy, but obviously it's going to require resources, whether from the EU or from national government, in order to accelerate the programme that we have at the moment.
And is it just the case that not everywhere can be accommodated? If we're now facing long-term climate change, in effect some parts of our coastline will have to be surrendered to the sea.
Absolutely. Like, we're in an era where we have finite resources. We're not going to have the flood defence solution as a solution for every particular area. But we're looking at them on a case-by-case basis through the Office of Public Works and through the Government's Coordinating Committee. And we will do everything we possibly can in the short term with emergency aid and obviously in the long term with these type of measures through the Office of Public Works.
That was the Environment Minister, Phil Hogan. Professor John Sweeney, the question, I suppose, is climate change responsible for, first of all, the ferocity of the storms that we've been seeing?
Well, for the ferocity of the storms we've been seeing, the first point to make is, of course, that we have seen storms of similar ferocity in the past. We can go back to Hurricane Debbie in 1961. We can go back to various high-intensity storm events in the 90s. So they're not in themselves all that unusual. We entered a very violent phase of storm development round about mid-December after a very quiescent summer and autumn. And the short-term answer is that the jet stream axis changed and we began to get these strings of depressions queuing up in the Atlantic. So we will always have storms as part of Irish climatology. We will always have them into the future. What has changed this time round has been that we've got a juxtaposition of unfortunate coincidences with the storms happening at the same time as the high spring tides were occurring. And we also had exceptionally high spring tides at the same time this year because the moon was actually much closer to the Earth than normal. So we got what was called supermoons and therefore perigean or very exceptionally high spring tides, and all of that happened as the storms came ashore. And of course the third component in all of that was the very deep nature and deep depression which they showed, because last night, for example, we had sea level pressures of below 950 millibars, and for every 1 millibar fall in pressure below an average, we get about a 1 centimetre rise in local sea level. Mm-hmm. So all of that was piling up, all of that was sort of making matters worse. The storm surge arrived at the same time as the high tide, as the depression. So we were getting an exceptionally high water event. But the climate change component to all that is lurking in the background as well, because all of this is happening on a rising sea level situation. 3.2 millimetres per year of sea level rise is currently occurring globally. So we're facing a situation where even if we get the same kind of combination of events in the future, they'll be happening from a higher sea level, and therefore they will be more extreme.
And what is that process of the rising sea level? Is it that as the ocean gets warmer, the water expands, the atmosphere gets warmer, the ice melts?
The ocean warms, about 50% of it is due to simply the water column expanding. Water, like everything else, expands when it gets heated, and we're heating the ocean. The Atlantic is warmer than it was, so it's holding more energy, so it's releasing more heat into the atmosphere. So storms are likely to be more violent into the future, and we may well face more problematical storms into the future. The other half, of course, is due to land-based ice entering the ocean system. The sea ice situation has no contribution to make to global sea level because that ice is already floating on the sea. But land-based ice from Greenland, from Antarctica, and from the glaciers of the world, we now know are melting very quickly. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change estimated that between Antarctica and Greenland, there's just under 400,000 million tonnes of water being added to the global ocean every year. That's a huge amount, mm-hmm. and that's from land-based ice. So we're seeing that adding to sea level, and we're seeing sea level accelerating as a consequence of that. In the last century, sea level was rising by about 1.8 millimetres per year. It has now accelerated to 3.2. So if you like, there's a kind of a ratchet in the background where even in the future, if we get an event which was even of lesser magnitude climatologically than we had in the last few days, it's likely to produce the same kind of impact and even a more severe impact because the level is higher that it's starting from.
So to sum up, we are going to see more frequent occurrences of what we are currently witnessing and potentially more devastating consequences.
Yes, I mean, this has been well flagged for over a decade now. We know that Ireland, for example, is likely to get wetter in winter, so we're going to see more floods inland. We know that we're seeing some higher wave action in the Atlantic offshore. We had a record wave off Donegal, I think, last week, 20-odd metres of a wave. So storm intensity would seem to be increasing. Now, it goes through cycles. We've had about three decades of relatively calm conditions. The last big event like this, I suppose, was the end of the 1980s. So it's not one event that will happen tomorrow and the day after or the year after. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of an event which has a probability attached to it. And it's that probability occurring with the other unfavourable circumstances that brings disaster.
Marcella Corcoran-Kennedy of Fine Gael, do you know, is any of this being discussed at government level?
Oh, absolutely. And it's been taken very seriously. In fact, Minister Hayes has visited a number of the areas and is going to visit Kerry and Cork tomorrow to talk to the people there, the local authority, to see at first hand what is happening and what can be done.
I suppose I'm talking about rather than just firefighting when the events occur, the longer term planning, the putting in place of flood defences, which will prevent the damage that Professor Sweeney has talked about happening in the future.
Absolutely. And in fact, where the flood defences have been erected down in Clonmel and Mallow, I think, as a result of flooding a couple of years back, they have been very effective. However, such is the scale of the flooding and the investment that's required, that serious thought is going to have to be given to this, because we had the heads of the bill presented to us to do with the climate action and low carbon bill, which Minister Hogan produced last year and invited the Joint Oireachtas Committee to produce a report on, and we held hearings during the summer and produced a report subsequent to that, and I understand that he will be producing the legislation this year. So we have very big questions to deal with. I mean, we have to address climate change and the fact that it's happening, and we have to address where the areas are that are being affected. You see, the first thing you have to do is deal with the people and make sure people are safe.
Sure.
And thankfully, that's the case.
But do you concede, Marcella, that the government, and I know that we're living in the economic times that we are, but the financial considerations given are paltry. The government has earmarked €50 million for 5 years on flood defences. And we're told today by the Intergovernmental Conference on Climate Change that globally, the cost of damage, if we do nothing to combat climate change, is €73 trillion every year until the end of the century.
Oh, well, there's no denying that. And as Professor Sweeney said, this was such an unusual occurrence in terms of the Atlantic storms going on since the beginning of December and the unusually high tide. So it's not something that you could predict would happen, you know, today or tomorrow.
But there's no overall strategy. There's no overall policy. It's all very short-sighted.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that, because this is where we have to look at the actions that we're going to take in terms of addressing our own responsibilities around climate change. And also we're going to have to evaluate what are we going to do for the landowners, for example. What are we going to do for the individuals that are affected? And all of that does cost an awful lot of money, and we're going to have to invest an awful lot of money in this.
Tom McGurk, what's your view on this?
There's another matter should be raised here, and the government can do something about it, and that is the, I think, the disgraceful behaviour of the insurance companies, because when you get flooded, not only might your premium go up, they'll stop covering you. Mm-hmm. And we have a situation where there are thousands and thousands of people in this country, the victims of the last two or three days, who the insurance companies not only will refuse to cover, but will continue to take massive profits out of this country. What are you doing about that in the government?
Well, that's something that's certainly going to have to be dealt with. And maybe we're going to have to think differently about this.
Well, Minister Hayes was on this programme last night. He said he was bringing a memo to Cabinet about that very issue next week, about the insurance industry. But he was making the point that why should the insurance companies insure businesses in areas that aren't properly protected? I mean, it comes back to government strategy.
But that's what insurance companies are supposed to do, insure you against the flood, the sea flooding in your door. What's the point of having insurance if when you need it, it's no good to you? I mean, it's a contradiction in terms. They just slap on huge amounts of money if you've been flooded or refuse it. I mean, that's a great idea.
But they're in
just
the business of making profits. So if the government or whoever the local authorities have not put in place proper preventative measures, why would they insure people?
So the people are being punished because the government has let them down by the insurance companies. I don't think that's a very satisfactory state of affairs. I think insurance companies have more to do than make profits, and they make considerable profits. I mean, they're legislated for in this country. Will the government look at this? What can they do about it? Can they take the matter on? Could there be other forms of insurance brought in by the government to deal with this? You can't have a situation where people are sitting waiting, knowing that if this happens again, their business closes or they have to abandon their home.
John Sweeney.
Yeah, I think, you know, we get major events like this and we react to them very quickly, and 3 weeks later we've forgotten about them. This doesn't come as a surprise to me, these particular events. I mean, we've been flagging them for about 10 years now. We know that we're facing increases in flood frequency, that we're facing return periods that are much shorter than they were 20 years ago. I think there's an urgency which has been lacking in the past few years. I mean, I was very disappointed when the minister in November 2011 said that climate change legislation wasn't a priority. And we've had about three or four climate bills now which have simply not gone through the system. So we have had opportunities to tackle this problem and look for the future kind of strategies that we need. We need to resource it. £250 million by 2015 will only go a very, very small way towards protecting the kind of urban areas that we need to protect. We can't protect everywhere. We can't protect agricultural land economically. We can't protect golf courses economically. But we can protect areas of our cities. And Dublin and Cork in particular, they are cities which have grown onto reclaimed land in many cases. And so there is a vulnerable population.
But when
which
you
has
hear Phil Hogan talking about finite resources, that's the reality of the moment. The resources simply aren't there.
The resources, I think, well, it's a case of prioritising resources. The Office of Public Works, it does a good job, but it simply doesn't have the resources to do a proper job. And like everywhere else, the personnel has been severely cut back. So we have to recognise that if we want to tackle the problem seriously, we have to prioritise it. If you think of Dublin and Cork, we have about 15,000 addresses in Dublin City and in Dublin and Cork, which lie below about 3.5 metres above sea level. If we have insurance claims from those people, we're looking very quickly at a potential cost of €1 billion. Now, they will not get insurance again, as Tom says. Mm-hmm. So we're faced with a long-term problem, which has huge financial implications. We're faced with issues of infrastructure, which we may lose and which we may be investing in today unwisely. So we simply have to get to grips with this problem and recognise that only by a concerted legislative attack on the problem, by making legislation urgent, by complying with the existing requirements we have in Europe to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions in a serious way, rather than planning to increase them as we appear to be doing in some sectors at the moment, that we will have any credibility in tackling this problem in the future.
I mean, the other thing that the government could do is look at the planning situation. We've been building in floodplains, and we've also been putting in systems whereby when the water falls on your roof within moments, it's in a gutter, within moments it's in a stream, the whole principle of soakage, which works so well, has disappeared and you have flash flooding. So, the government should now look here on in that there's a requirement to make allowance for the fact that we may have this sort of weather again. I mean, that doesn't require money. That just requires organisation, doesn't
it? Well, the issue was clear today at leaders' questions that there will be no more buildings in floodplains. Mm. The time of zoning lands for development and imagining that you could engineer solutions to everything, that day is gone. Because you can see now a lot of the developments that were built in floodplains, you know, the water has to go somewhere. And in fact, the type of material that we've been using, for example, all the type of hard landscaping that we have, tarmacadam, concrete, all of it is non-porous. And so where is the water going to go? In ordinary weather conditions, never mind when you have storm conditions like this, and indeed the high tides that we've seen.
We made some recommendations about 10 years ago as one of our reports in terms of planning for coastal protection. One was not to have new build within about 100 metres of the of a soft coastline. Second was to stop sand removal from beaches, because beaches are our best form of defence. Thirdly was to stop estuary recovery taking place and infill of estuaries, which again reduces our defence mechanisms. All of those, I'm pleased to say, did find their way, as far as I'm aware, into the development plans of some of the authorities on the East Coast at least. And I think if we have these kinds of guidelines embedded in development plans for the rest of the country, for coastal Ireland, it will help considerably into the future. But we do have to avoid making the mistakes of the past again, because we're living in a more extreme world in the future, and we simply can't afford to take a chance on these things.
Some text, Anne says, I'm paying property tax for a house that floods. No flood insurance either. It's a joke. Ray Kilkenny says, Ireland was devastated by the worst storm in recorded history 175 years ago in 1839 and the night of the big wind. And Kate in Dublin says, putting up flood defences is just firefighting. What is the government doing about tackling climate change? And the answer is nothing. And back to that point, Marcella Corcoran Kennedy of Fine Gael, it's about prioritising. And I put it to you again, it may be a priority for the Office of Public Works, but it doesn't extend much beyond that within government.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that at all, because there are agencies, departments and local authorities who are all working together on this, and they have to. We don't have any choices on this. And when when the climate change bill is published, which will be this year, I think we will get, you know, we'll be able to put things, I think, on more firm footing, because I hope that the minister will take on board many of the recommendations that the Joint the Rockies Committee on the Environment made, such as having sectoral roadmaps, such as having an independent advisory committee.
But on the wider issue of combating climate change, it seems, as Professor Sweeney has indicated, that the government is reversing its aims. If you look at the energy efficiency regulations for new buildings, that's been pushed back to 2020. The emissions targets for our energy suppliers, the European Energy Efficiency Directive wants us to do, 1.4 million gigawatts saved? The Irish government says, no, we're only going to save 550.
Well, look, this is very challenging. Remember, Ireland is a very energy-hungry country. We all individually have responsibilities to reduce our own consumption of energy. Right here, right now, at this moment in time, there are houses all across this country where there are electrical appliances left on, where there are items of electronic equipment on standby. You know, we as individuals also have our own responsibilities. And while, you know, the government, of course, has to take the lead, individually we also do. Now, I know that the business is making tremendous effort, because clearly it's a good decision for them, because if they can save on their energy bills, then it's good for them and it's good for the environment. And so I think it has to be a whole across society acceptance that we need to ensure that we reduce our own energy consumption.
John Sweeney, what do you make of that?
I think energy efficiency is very important. I think an improved energy efficiency emphasis is vital. It would get rid of some of the problems we're currently facing, for example, in terms of piling issues as well at the same time, if we had a proper energy efficiency efficiency policy. It will go some of the way, and I think it's something we should encourage, but it doesn't get away from the hard fact that here we are with something like Harvest 2020, planning an increase in our emissions from agriculture at a time when we're bound to reduce by 20% our greenhouse gas emissions by 2020.
But what caused
we're ignoring a lot of the key things.
But John, what caused the big wind in 1837?
1837.
Was that greenhouse gas?
It wasn't, certainly. No, yeah, it
so
wasn't.
So what caused it then?
It was the same kind of cause as we had in the events of the last few days. It was a much more severe event than
we had.
But
nothing to do with humans.
Nothing to do with humans, yeah. No. I mean, all events are not to do with humans. We have a
so
human
component.
So why has
this got to do with humans? Then?
This has got to do with humans in the sense that we're increasing the temperature of the Atlantic, so our storms are likely to get more active. We're increasing the water vapour component of our atmosphere, so our rainfall is going to get heavier. So these are kind of risk factors that we didn't have in 1839. Now, we may still have an event which is as bad as 1839.
Yeah.
Indeed, the insurance industry assure me that if 1839 was repeated, the worst possible scenario for them would be for every house in Dublin to lose one slate. And that would be a fairly catastrophic scenario. We go back to 1839 and we see that there was fish landing 6 miles in from the coast on the west coast. We find salt water being washed all the way across the island. That was a huge event. We certainly don't want to increase the probability of that event occurring in the future again by giving the atmosphere more energy than we need to through not controlling our greenhouse gas emissions. But the main point is, of course, that we're a small country. And what we
and
do
are we
is
an energy-hungry country in the way that Marcella has talked about?
Well, in terms of our greenhouse gas emissions, we have higher per capita emissions than most of the rest of Europe. We have higher per capita emissions than Germany, than France, than the UK. Considerably higher than almost all our European partners. We are an energy hungry country because we have quite a long heating season. We have a longer heating season than many other countries, but we have opportunities for using renewable energy in a way that many other countries don't, and that is our way out of this problem.
Okay, well, Marcella, do you want to come
in? I was just going to
come in,
just in relation to agriculture there. You see, there are huge challenges at European level and indeed globally because agriculture here is a big industry. We can produce food enough to feed 30 million people. There are other countries that don't have the climate that we have where they can grow. And so they're going to need the food that we produce. So there's a big challenge there in terms of making growing the food that they will need and what we will need ourselves efficiently and using the least amount of energy possible. And that's a massive challenge.
Mm-hmm. Aidan Corish is listening to us in New York this evening. He says he lives in Sag Harbour and he says we are allowed a maximum lot coverage of 25%. Our house can only cover 20%. The rest is for paths, terraces, etc. We are expected to install dry wells so that all water that falls on our property remains on our property. Regulation and building inspectors are vital. And one on insurance. On the insurance companies declining to provide insurance to some people, we have a national health policy which says insurance companies cannot discriminate against the very old or the very sick. So why not a similar policy for home insurance? And one for you, Professor Sweeney. It says you have asserted that sea levels are now rising at 3 centimetres a year.
3 millimetres.
It's 3 millimetres, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Well, the person goes on to say that overstates the rise by a factor of 10. Yeah, it is 3 millimetres. And that was released by the IGCC as well today.